Welcome back to Honk Off the Press. My name is Madison Ritzik. I am the Iowa football beat reporter at the Gazette. And this week we have Ryan Karchi from the LA Times, the USC reporter for the LA Times. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. So we have quite a bit to talk about this week with Iowa and USC playing against each other. First time as Big Ten foes in LA Coliseum, which is kind of cool. And then the last time they've played was the Holiday Bowl in 2019. So it's been a little while. So I'm curious, Ryan, let's just start with the kind of overall thoughts of the Trojan season this year. They're 5-1 in Big Ten play. So they look really good so far. And in my opinion, they're one of the more underrated programs in this conference right now.
Funny story, that bowl game in 2019 was actually my first bowl game on the USC beat. So I was there.
There you go.
They no longer play that game in that stadium either, which is probably a good decision, judging by that day. But no, USC season has been interesting in that there have been a lot of great signs and a lot of inconsistencies throughout. You look at the offense, and like it has been pretty much every year under Lincoln Riley, it has really hummed, like especially when the running game has gotten going, and the run game has been one of the better backfields in all of college football. So this team has a lot of offensive firepower. That is usually the case with Lincoln Riley, but defensively has always kind of been the question. And it's the same question again this year. And, you know, there's a lot of talent, and you can tell in stretches that, they have what it takes to be a top tier Big Ten defense, but it's just been very inconsistent. And at their worst, you know, they've had games get away from them. That's how they lost to Illinois. That's how they lost to Notre Dame. It's certainly something that could happen to Iowa. So it's hard to trust USC completely yet, but you know, you can sort of see the makings of a team that is worthy of the playoff.
Yeah, it's interesting. They've really kind of been one of the most not talked about college football playoff contenders in the country right now, at least just with how the rankings have come out the last 2 weeks. Number 17 for the Trojans this week. It feels like if they have an opportunity to win out, and they have a pretty tough end of the regular season to kind of close things out, but it feels like that opportunity does exist even with some of those consistencies. Am I correct in that statement?
Definitely. I think, you know, as it stands right now, and there a lot of weird things can happen within the Big Ten standings, but as it stands right now, it seems like winning out would be enough for USC to be the third place team in the Big Ten. And arguably, you honestly maybe find yourself in a better spot because you don't have to play in a conference championship game, and yet you still make it into the playoff. But there's a lot still left to go in between that. So, and there are a lot of hurdles, including, you know, certainly this weekend.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about this particular matchup. Right now, the betting line was a 6.5-point favorite towards the Trojans. USC's done really well at home this year, 5-0 throughout the year. Is there something that you've noticed with how USC has played at home, maybe in comparison to some of those road matchups where those losses have existed maybe? Or has it just kind of been a situation where it all depends on which side of the ball shows up and shows out?
I think they usually have an easier time getting started at home, especially offensively. And Jaden Maiava, their quarterback, has been, you know, a lot better at home than he has been on the road for the most part. So I think those two things are part of why. But I also think on the road, they've had a lot of tough matchups. So, you know, it's hard to take too much from, you know, the disparity between the two. But so I wouldn't like read into that too much coming into this game. But I do think, you know, given the stakes of this one, we might see a pretty good environment in the Coliseum. Although, you know, heavy rain is not really something that LA fans are into. So that could also adversely affect things too.
Yeah, I would say the last forecast said it was going to be low 60s and a lot of rain, kind of starting sporadically and just kind of turning into just a straight, just complete wet football field. So that obviously is not the end all be all, but it's something to certainly keep in mind of. Speaking of Maiava, wanted to ask about the two quarterbacks that'll be at facing each other between Maiava and Mark Gronowski. Both pretty mobile quarterbacks, both have the ability to kind of flash in their own ways. What have you seen from just kind of taking a look at and understanding Iowa's offense? What have you seen from Gronowski in his one season with the Hawkeyes so far?
You know, I think what has impressed me the most about him, and what I know Dan Lynn, USC's defensive coordinator, has brought up is, you know, just how Iowa has been able to use, you know, designed quarterback runs really to their advantage in moving the offense in the exact way that an Iowa offense likes to move. And I think, like, in the red zone especially, that is such a valuable weapon when your quarterback is as big and as powerful as he is. And I think against USC, that's sort of a unstoppable force, immovable object situation in which USC has actually been very good in the red zone on defense. That's been probably the best aspect of this defense to date, only allowing like basically 2/3 of trips into the red zone to end in points, which is third in the nation. You know, that'll be a really interesting matchup if Iowa is able to move the ball into the red zone and really just eat up clock. You know, can they get USC's defense on their heels? You know, it's something we've seen, you know, out of that's what Illinois did basically in USC's first loss of the season. So there is a blueprint for making it happen. And I think, you know, USC has been gashed on the ground like in those games. I mean, against Notre Dame, Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price combined for over 300 yards rushing. So this is a really interesting coaching matchup, I think, between Iowa's offense and USC's defense. And the key is just, can USC's defense get Iowa off the field, force them into third and longs, and make Gronowski have to throw, which in like very predictable downs, which is not Iowa's strength. And I think, you know, if USC is able to really do that throughout, then USC will probably win this game.
Yeah, and one of the things that you mentioned was Iowa's ability, or any team's ability, really, to kind of eat up the clock and kind of keep that USC defense on the field as long as possible. Iowa's done that a couple times. They did that against Oregon last week, especially leading into that what would have been the game-winning touchdown drive until that 39-yard field goal was kicked for the Ducks. So I'm curious, you know, have you looked at the matchup and the comparison between some of the familiar foes that these two teams have faced so far this year? And if you haven't, then I guess what about the offense, defense, coaching matchup is the most intriguing to you? Is it the line? Is it the ability to like force Gronowski to make those predictable throws? What about it are you honing in on the most?
I haven't done a ton of study of you know, other common opponents, but I really think USC's defensive line and linebacking core, and maybe especially the linebacking core, because that's kind of been a weakness of the defense throughout this season. I think, you know, it'll really be on them to, you know, be, you know, more sound than they've been in recent weeks. And I think the biggest difference with USC, especially with that front, is, you know, has shown up in the first and second, the difference between the first and second halves the last 2 weeks. Like against Northwestern and Nebraska, in the second half, USC holds both of them to just a field goal in each game, which, you know, they looked outstanding after halftime in both games. And that's a credit to Danton Lynn making adjustments. He's always been very good at that. But, you know, I think this game will really be decided in how both of those two units set the tone initially. You know, if Iowa takes up, you know, 2/3 of the first quarter with a 17 play drive, like that's really going to put USC on their heels. And, you know, when the weather is as bad as it is, you know, it becomes a little bit more predictable of a game in terms of having to lean on the run, you know, can USC's running back, who is a walk-on and who has been very good to this point of the season, but, you know, struggled a little bit against Notre Dame in a similar situation, like, you know, can they continue to like play that same game that Iowa has set the tone of? And I think it really just depends on who sets the tone first for this game, because if USC just starts, you know, launching the ball down the field and, you know, scoring long touchdowns, like Iowa's just not going to be able to keep up. And USC, I think, will, you know, USC could very well win this game by 3 touchdowns in a situation like that. But if Iowa is able to establish things, if USC's linebacking core, you know, really struggles to stop Gronowski, or, you know, lets up big plays to Kamari Moulton, or, you know, just any various like things happen in the run game, I think it could be just a long day for USC's defense. And it's, you know, we've seen it happen before.
Yeah, well, I think the idea of the game going to a shootout is something that maybe some football fanatics wouldn't hate to see, but I don't necessarily know if there's any Iowa fans out there that would love the idea of a shootout, especially in the rain, on the road, all of those kinds of factors into it. But you did mention USC's running back, King Miller. I did want to ask about him. 636 rushing yards this season, 5 rushing touchdowns. He's a walk-on. You mentioned it. And he's somebody that competed for playing time. Have you seen a player like this make that kind of a jump and to be able to earn the playing time he has, especially in, I mean, I guess this modern era of college football? But for him to have the season he's having, what have you made of that?
I haven't. I've seen, you know, walk-on stories where you maybe see a guy who you can tell that maybe he doesn't, you can tell why he's a walk-on, but, you know, maybe just out of some circumstances, one game goes right. One long run, he breaks. And at the beginning of the season, King Miller, like one of his first carries was a 75-yard touchdown run. And it felt like a cute story at the time, right? But ever since then, he just kept doing the same thing. Every game, he's broken a long run. So at this point, I think, you know, we just have to classify this as a huge miss by all these other schools. Now, he did have a couple scholarship offers, Portland State, San Jose State, Nevada. But these were not big schools. And his high school coach told me that most coaches told, like D1 coaches told him that they thought King wasn't going to be fast enough, which is truly amazing given all the breakaway runs he's had, like I said. So, it was a big miss by everyone but USC. And USC was very lucky that, you know, he happened to have dreamed of being a USC running back his entire life. So now he's really doing it.
Yeah, well, and just pulling up his stats here, he's had 1, 2, 3, 4 rushes, at least 4 games where he's had at least 1 40-plus-yard rush. That longest one being the 75-yard one of the season over. I mean, that's impressive. And it is interesting that you say, like, you know, he was originally told by some coaches that his speed was the issue. I watched some of his highlights from this past season. It does not look like he, like, you would have to fool me for that. Like,
I'm not sure what they were watching. So, yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe there's been a significant change since then, but, you know, his high school coach was like, we were baffled at the time. And USC didn't offer him a scholarship either at the time. They just happened to be kind of lucky that he was willing to take a preferred walk-on spot over getting a scholarship at other spots. But it's really paying off now because they, you know, had a very clearly a very deep running back room. And, you know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, maybe even as short as next week, maybe we see Wayman Jordan, who, you know, at the beginning of the season was really looking like honestly one of the best, you know, running backs in college football.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stay with offense and just flip to a different skill position and talk about this receiving room a little bit. You mentioned that, you know, there's a chance for this game to really go against Iowa and it become a shootout where USC's offense is able to just exploit everything. And it, just looking at numbers and looking at how this receiving core has developed this year, you've got a majority of catches going to a handful of players like every year, but it feels like there's a number of receivers that have gotten involved throughout this season. How deep has this room been for Maeva to be able to make those kinds of plays throughout this year?
You know, it's not even so much the depth of the receiver room as it is the fact that the tight end room is as good as it's been since Lincoln Riley took over at USC. And, you know, they've been able to use both Lake McCree and Walker Lyons, who are, you know, both viable starting Big Ten tight ends on the field at the same time, which I think that 12 personnel, as Iowa knows quite well, is, you know, the flexibility that you have out of that is just something that he hasn't been able to do really since he was at Oklahoma. And that was, you know, one of the keys of, you know, Oklahoma's like dominant running game at the time. And we've seen the results this year. Like, they've been as good running the ball as they've been, you know, in any of Riley's 4 years. So yeah, it's, I think those two tight ends being able to really take some of the receiving load off of some of these other receivers who, you know, I would say there's a pretty big gap between, you know, the third and fourth receiver after the first two. But the first two are, you know, arguably I would say is a top five, you know, duo, receiving duo in all of college football. You start with Mekhi Lemon, who has just been incredible after the catch with the ball in his hand. Rarely ever lets the first person get him down and is just, you know, always open over the middle of the field. So, you know, he does most of his work out of the slot, and that coupled with the tight ends has really been just like a devastating combination in the middle of the field. And that's kind of where Jay Maiava has, you know, done really well and has improved his game down the field this season. So, you know, Mekhi Lemon first is your number one. And then you have Jacoby Lane, who is, you know, kind of that perfect, you know, catch in traffic, jump ball guy, and, you know, had 12 touchdowns last season to lead the Big Ten on something like, I think he only had like 38 catches. So essentially every third catch was a touchdown, but he's fought through some injuries this year. So his stats maybe aren't as gaudy as Lemon, who's going to, you know, probably lead the Big Ten in receiving, but you know, he is just as dangerous, just in a different, very different way. So you have a very varied, you know, passing attack. And then, you know, Jaden Maiava has really just been sharp down the field and, you know, hasn't turned the ball over, which has been a huge difference from last year.
Yeah, the turnovers are particularly were something that I noticed with Maiava, which is his ability to just complete passes, especially ones like to Lemon, like to Lane, that, you know, sometimes are contested balls, sometimes one-on-one opportunities. And so I do notice that, and I think that also might be a key for Iowa's defense, is trying to get Maiava to throw a pick or just get uncomfortable and not maybe throw to the best option out there, especially when you do look at that 12 personnel and you have all, I mean, you put the 12 personnel on the field, that's a lot of options to give the ball, whether, like, regardless of which way you want to go. And so I do think a turnover scenario is going to probably be a huge part of Iowa's defensive plan. But getting down to, in my opinion, this is one of my favorite parts of doing these podcasts with other reporters. I'm going to ask you these two questions. I want to know, what is it going to take for USC to be able to walk out of the Coliseum with a win? And then on the flip side, what is it going to take for Iowa to be able to walk out of the Coliseum with a win?
You know, I think it's almost the same answer, but in a, sort of a different flavor in both ways. I think for USC to walk out with a win, and I kind of said it earlier, I think first it starts with the defense starting strong. If they're able to get early stops, like I said before, if they're able to force Iowa into third and longs, their pass defense has improved a lot, I think, over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I think that would put Iowa in a bad spot, because then, you know, once Iowa's on its heels, USC's offense can be really devastating with big plays down the field. And, you know, Mekhi Lemon gets it going and suddenly, like, he has 12 catches in the game. And I certainly won't rule out that happening, but I think we probably know how things are going to go in the first quarter, because we'll see just what kind of tone has been set by USC. And I think, you know, if that's Jaden Maiava throwing down the field, you know, no pressure on him, the offensive line is looking great. I just don't, like I said before, I just don't think Iowa can keep up if that's the game that ends up being played. Iowa walks out with a win if the rain has just made this an ugly game. Gronowski has sort of forced USC's linebackers into bad situations. USC has a turnover, like you mentioned. I think that is a huge part of this game. Really just all the boring stuff kind of goes Iowa's way. And that is an advantage certainly that Iowa has in this game, because USC has, you know, in games like that, USC has performed pretty poorly. Or down the stretch when they find themselves in critical situations in which they need to come through or they can't make a mistake, they've shown a propensity for making those mistakes. So I think if Iowa can force those mistakes and can play the game that it wants to play, kind of exactly like you said before, like they played last week against Oregon, I don't know that USC can keep up with Oregon. So I think, you know, already Iowa was within a game-winning field goal of winning that game. So, yeah, I think that would be the formula generally. And I think Kirk Ferentz has shown that he's pretty good at being himself when it comes to this stuff, whereas Lincoln Riley has sometimes gotten a little antsy when put into these situations where he needs to just trust in things and USC just needs to, you know, get the job done. So it's a really fascinating mental battle, I think. And I'm really just interested to see that play out.
Yeah, I like that breakdown. I think that makes sense. And honestly, I don't think there's a lot of college football, at least Big Ten Iowa fans, that are going to be opposed to a low scoring, gritty, maybe even a little sloppy kind of game, because that seems to be the MO for the Hawkeyes over the last, you know, up 10 years at this point. One final question for you, Ryan. This does not have anything to do more so with this weekend's matchup, but we do have to ask this. What was your reaction to the fake punt against Northwestern last weekend?
My first reaction was just shock. Then it went into respect, and then it was, wait, is this actually legal? And then it sort of lingered there for a while. And then I think I kind of went back to, I kind of respect it. And I understand and I fully respect like why people think it's Bush League. It probably is. I think that's fair to admit. But that said, you know, I think he found a loophole in the rules, maybe knowing that even if they tried to call the penalty, let's say they were fully aware of it, they would have already pulled off the fake punt. So it really wouldn't have mattered. Which I sort of respect the attitude about that. And that I will say, and I wrote this in my newsletter, like that's just so quintessentially Lincoln Riley. Like he is going to push the limit. He doesn't really care if you care about it. And he, you know, he's occasionally brilliant in those ways. And also, like, I think to piss people off. So I think it worked out just exactly like he wanted it to. And there's nothing really anyone is going to do about it now. So I think he thinks he won. Now, the one thing I respect most, I'll say this, was USC social media accounts yesterday
started posting videos,
making fun of it, kind of leaning into the villain role. Mm-hmm. And that's what USC has been missing for way too long. They should always lean into the villain role. They're great at it.
Keep doing it. No, I saw the video and I think that was what prompted me to say, okay, I need to make sure, you know, when you and I sit down and talk, I ask about this, because I thought the video was hilarious. I fully love when teams and organizations lean into humor of those kinds of situations. But I think I did, like, I think I had to watch the play like 3 or 4 times to like actually process what had happened. So to see it in real time and then process it after the fact, had to have been a very interesting experience in that Friday night game for sure.
I'm still processing it, honestly.
Yeah, I don't blame you. All right, Ryan. Well, thank you so much. I know this has been a very hectic week with not just football, but all of the other sports that are in action. So I do appreciate the time. All right. And if you guys like this content, please continue to follow the podcast that comes out once a week. And then I also have a newsletter that comes out every Friday morning. It's free to sign up at the Gazette. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed. Be empowered. Subscribe to The Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.